Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's that time again. It's our Imbizo on Point of View. And one of the things that we've been watching over some time now is what seems to be racial tensions in Hartbeespoort. And quite alarming. And yesterday, the minister, Deputy Minister of Water and Sanitation, went to visit the community there. We'll play a clip of what he had to say. But I wanted to start with the community members here and get a real sense on the ground and maybe better background on what exactly is happening there. Hartbees Community Development Initiative spokesperson Russell Baloyi is on the line with us this evening. Appreciate your time, Mr. Baloyi. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you, Pamela.
Mr. Baloyi, maybe give us some background as to when did the tensions begin in that area?
I think in all fairness, but maybe just to put things into context, I think it's very important that I reflect on one development from today. Today, we were, as a background, today we were at the High Court in Johannesburg. The matter that we were going to attend is a matter to do with what is called Contact Sport, which is a group of four young people, Dilip Mabikela, Matamoge, Musi, and Trapo. These four young people, back in 1981, they decided that they want to fight against white domination. That was in 1981. And today, we were in court to attend to that matter. And yesterday, we had the Hartbeespoort attending to something similar. We were having a problem in Hartbeespoort, where white people, for whatever reason, linked to our past, they have a very strong sense of entitlement over Hartbeespoort. To a point that, as you would know, Hartbeespoort then is a government-owned property. Mm-hmm. It was built by government many years ago. For some reason, white people stayed over there. As you would also know, that any land that is owned, that is next to any dam in the country, belongs to the government. Mm. So white people were there, they had all the information. But now, post-1994, a lot of black people now were allowed to move around. So what you are experiencing now is that there are black people who want to take advantage of opportunities around the dam, on the very same land that is owned by government. Mm. Some of us, we have been given the permission to occupy by government specific portions of land around the land. But what we have been experiencing is serious challenges with our white counterparts not coming to the party when it comes to giving space for black people to come in and operate their business. But I must state that when you look at Hartbeespoort, the kind of racism there is not just the racism that is targeted at us as business people who want to operate business in the dam. But it's a daily activity. I mean, the organization about 2-3 years ago, we had to take to report the matter to the Human Rights Commission, where one of the local schools there, actually there was just no English school in Hartbeespoort, government schools I'm talking about. Mm. Back in 1976, we had young people who were marching against Afrikaans as a medium of instruction. Now, around 2018, basically, to be specific, we had a case where it was an issue again that Afrikaans is being forced as a medium of instruction. And for some reason, some kids, black kids, are very smart, and they were able to actually do very well in that African. But as a matter of principle, we felt that it's important that learners must be given a choice to also be taught the English in their very own languages. And as you would know, in other cases, if I were to give you another classical example of racism, we have cases where people throughout the country, I mean, as we speak between me and you now, there are people who are saving their money every month for the sole purpose of going to RCBS board come December time to enjoy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You go to some of the establishments there, the treatment and the experience that you get is just something else, simply because they are black. I mean, if you go to Google right now and just say RCBS board racism, you'll be shocked what you come across.
So give me a better sense of, you know, the daily experience. You just gave me an example of schools for some time that didn't have an English medium school, public schools. And on a day-to-day basis, as you're saying, the racism is prevalent. Give me examples of that.
Yeah, I mean, for example, you'll have cases now from the business side. If you want to operate a business in the dam, the rules are very clear that you're supposed to, you have your permission to occupy, you'll get that. Secondly, you need to get your liquor license. You apply for your liquor license, and if you are black, you go and apply for the liquor license.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it, the white community there will mobilize. We have evidence of some of the people who go to their groups to say, hey, this black person has applied for this. Can you please go and contest it? And they will contest it that, no, please don't grant. And if you're a black person, you might find that maybe on a Friday or Saturday, you were drinking, you get arrested or something happens to you. If you go to the police station, you might find that there are some few white people, but come in the morning, it will only be black people. And it cannot be that it's only black people who get drunk and then they're not able to be released at night. But it's simply because they are happy keeping black people there. You get that police station alone. I mean, if you go to the number of cases of people who have been beaten up by white people, some are just walking around. It's just something else. And if you look at how many convictions, they are very less. But we do have some few people who have really gone out of their way to spend their own money to prove cases of racism, and they were able to win their cases. So those are some of the real challenges. I mean, some classical and stupid ones will be like some establishment there. You'll see them having some notices to say, no taxes. Of course, no taxes means somehow black people are not allowed. But when a taxi, the very same quantum, shows up, then it's white people inside. Then they call it a shuttle. Then people can just enjoy themselves the way they see fit. So some kind of racism that is happening there is so subtle.
Yeah.
You really need to kind of pay attention to see what's going on there.
I want to bring in here Hartley Ngwatu, who's owner of Legacy on the Dam, to join this conversation. Appreciate your time, Mr. Ngwatu. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Nemen. How are you?
I'm well. You know, we want to convene this conversation and get a better sense as listeners of your own experiences in that area and what really sparked the tensions to go as far as they've gone. Give us your sense and your experiences.
Look, I think as black people, we are much more tolerant. But there comes a time where we really get tired of being tolerant. And we've tolerated racism in RTBS more than we're supposed to. And I think it's about time that we challenge our white counterparts that this racism is no longer acceptable anymore, not after 30 years of our democracy.
Mr. Ngwatu, you know, when you engage the police, for instance, and we'll get to Bubbles Champagne Resort owner now, when you engage the police about some of the things that they do that are illegal, that are criminal, what's the response that you get from police officers?
It's horrible. And I'll give you a practical example. When I applied for my liquor license, it was leaked out by a white official who leaked it out to only a white group so that they can be able to object against my liquor license. And unfortunately, by the time he leaked it out for them to object, it was after I've already advertised in the Government Gazette, and the period for objections was long closed. So it was therefore irrelevant for them to try to object. But with that being said, the fact that a police officer used a police station for racial purposes, that he leaked a black establishment liquor license to a white group, I reported that to SAPS. I attended the disciplinary hearing, and he was only given a verbal warning. He's still an employee of SAPS today for using a police station for racial issues.
And so you still find that the police themselves are themselves in support of this racism?
Of course. How can a police officer, I mean, a police station supposed to serve all races irrespective of affiliation? Then it's clear that the Hartebees police station does not serve all the members of society the same. Mm. If you are of a particular race, you get treated differently. How can a white police officer who only leaked out a document belonging to a black establishment to white community and not be found guilty and be dismissed?
Mr. Ngwata, I'm going to put you back to the producer. Your line is crackling there a bit, but also joining this conversation is the owner of Bubble Champagne Gardens, who is Thabiso Matibedi, who is the owner of the resort that was burned down in August, obviously also sparked by this racial tension. Mr. Matibedi, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. Mr. Matibedi?
Good evening, Pimelo, and good evening to the listeners. Am I audible?
Yes, now you're starting to sound much better. Thanks for making time for us. I just want to get, you know, your story, your background story, and maybe take us through what happened on the fateful day when your resort was burned down.
Okay, thank you. It has never been an easy journey having to establish a business in Hartis, especially on the shoreline.
Mm.
From the day, the first day that I set foot on the then dumping ground, a bush that I initially found when coming in with my partner.
Mm.
Even when we started just to clean the place, issues started there. We were confronted, including my workers.
Mm-hmm.
But we sold it on, you know. When you believe in your vision, even though you get a rejection and objection, you stay true to your cause, ultimately you reach your goal. But as I said, it hasn't been easy. We were taken to the high court several times, which affected obviously the finances to develop what we initially had planned. You know,
and what are they taking you to court for?
You know, petty stuff. Things relating to the environment, to say the land that we were allocated, the biosphere, the protected land. But mind you, on the same land, there are two resorts that have been existing. People have built all over the dam. But when we now come in, we are subjected to processes and asked questions about things that are totally unrelated to what we want to do. At the time when they raised the environmental issues, environmental affairs actually came on board, and they did do their investigations, and they did give a report through one of the law firms that was representing the people who were attacking us at the time, to say the portion of land that we are located in actual fact around the dam, the land around the dam is not part of the biosphere. So fast forward, we, you know, that there was now diversion with the fact that you have a budget to develop, but now you end up having to spend a good portion of it to defend yourself in court. So we took a decision with my partner that whether we lose or win in court, let us try to build something, you know, so that we were able to recoup. Fortunately, the matter died a natural death at the time. But then the attacks continued with the local newspaper, with which wrote three defaming articles about myself and about my business partner. We then later took them to the press ombudsman, where we won the matter, and they were ordered to publish a public apology.
And what kind of stuff are they saying about you? You know, how personal are they going?
The first article, they said we're going to build an African island type of resort. If you know Hatties very well, there is an African island resort where they do slides, and it's frequented by black people with kids. They come in buses, they come in taxis. So, you know, that narrative or the story that they sold, you know, everyone has this vision of buses and taxis and influx of black people coming into the Schumannsville area. So they then started fighting us through the newspaper, which made their first article. The second article, they said land grab skulldery. It means that we grabbed the land, we stole the land. It was fun, and it was like 3 weeks in a row. The third week, they wrote an article. They said it's government corruption. Insinuating that my business partner is the daughter of the then Minister of Water and Sanitation, to say that we are located that portion of land in a corrupt way. And, you know, it totally didn't make sense to us at the time. However, through our colleague, Mr. Hartley, we managed to, you know, get advice from him and took the Comoran to court at the time. And we won the matter. They made a public apology. Then that led, obviously, to the attack that our colleague then encountered on the fateful Saturday, where he got beaten up, you know, to say he advised a young black couple to take the local newspaper too. You know, there were a lot of stories that were said. But however, even moving forward, trying to push business, it has never been easy. You try to apply for anything, you get rejection, objections from the community. You go to the police station to submit your application for a liquor license, it gets blocked there. You know, you try to do anything. There are even people who drive around who are whistleblowers. While you're trying to do something, a car stops, you get sworn at, you get attacked, you know. It has never been an easy journey, as I said. There always has been something. And remember, we now come in when businesses have been existing around the dam. We found boat cruise companies operating, playing music. We found resorts. Obviously, they were all white-owned, but there were never complaints. And mind you, we didn't only exist when we were allocated portions of land. We've been residents here. You know, so it was mind-boggling to hear people making comments and advancing issues that are not true, you know. And the funniest thing is everything that has been happening, now that we are doing it as black people, it seems to be wrong. You want to apply for anything, you are rejected. You go to the police station, you open up a case, no investigation, no feedback. You don't know what's happening. In 2018, when we were just developing the property, we incurred a damage, a malicious damage to our property. We opened the case, and the culprits were blatantly writing on Facebook. We even printed that evidence and provided it to the police station. I remember at the time the station commander called all the people that wrote on their Facebook pages to say if we dare start anything, they will sabotage. You know, they united against it. They did that.
So the sense I'm getting is that it's almost an organized group. Am I right in making that assumption?
Yes. Yes, it is an organized group. I must also mention that there is many people in the town, white people, who are totally against the nonsense that is happening.
Mm.
So we're dealing with a cabal, you know. We don't know. Remember, we just come now when we don't know a history of how all the other white people occupied the portions that they occupied. But now stories are coming out. I'm sure you've seen in newsroom, you know, the mention of how other white people got the portions of land and the illegalities of that. But there is no fight coming from white people against their own, and there has never been. We're just hearing things coming out now. And it's so surprising that the same privileges, same opportunities that were given to our white counterparts from the government, now that there's a transformation agenda to include black people, that they object to that. I mean, we're not talking private land. We're talking state land.
Mm,
You know, we equally have to benefit from it. And it's not like a cooperative type of thing. This is an economical opportunity. As an entrepreneur, business person, you see an opportunity, you come in, you do something to add value to the tourism of the town, to help the government to create jobs, you know, to help societal issues. You know, people need jobs, people need to be trained, people need to be exposed to boating and stuff. So it's more like, as black people, we are okay as customers, but we cannot set up shop and operate, you know, next to white-owned businesses. We get sabotaged every other day.
I'm going to take a quick break and we'll continue this conversation. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you if you have experienced as a customer, as a visitor in Harties, this kind of racism. 086-000-0959. You can also send us those voice notes on 063-688-0959. Perhaps you are also a business owner. Maybe you're a resident and you've been feeling this level of frustration as well in Harties. Just your sense of what is going on there. We will also play you a clip from the Deputy Minister who visited the area yesterday. I want to take a quick break, as I said. When we come back, I'll play the clip and then we'll continue with this conversation. But I do want your input. As I said, you can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. So the Deputy Minister of Water and Sanitation visited the Harties community yesterday to try and get to the bottom of these racial tensions that we've been hearing about in the past 20 minutes or so. He wasn't able to come onto the show, and you know, he's always been very generous with his time, but unfortunately he wasn't able to come onto the show. He was going to be on a flight at this time. So he has sent us an audio of what his comments were upon his visits yesterday. We'll continue this conversation with residents, with business owners as well in Harties. And I'm very looking forward to hearing from you and your comments on the story. 063-688-0959. Let's take a listen to Deputy Minister David Mashobo.
Today it was an important day. We come at a time when the community is in discord. There are issues of emotion, they don't agree. In the main, is around access to economic opportunities. At the center of their dispute is this beautiful dam that is here. That should be a source of hope and inspiration. We allowed them an opportunity to come from all walks of life, business, NGOs, environmental organizations, traditional leaders, including some of the pastors they were here. We might not have everybody that wanted to be here, including the civic organization. Fortunately, you were there, you could see how they were reacting on issues, but to sum it up, they all agreed they have a shared aspiration. They want to work together. They have some matters that they are a little bit uncomfortable with. For an example, there have been developments where certain people, because of the color of the skin, they've experienced violence. They've been beaten. Some of them, their properties and business have been cut down. And in our own explanation, we must condemn it. And as government, we can't allow lawlessness. But there was also a good spirit to say they want to do good. Some are proposing to say, you know what, to demonstrate that they don't agree with this incident that has happened here. They can't be associated with them. They say probably they want to do it in their own hands and contribute in the rebuilding. This is what I can say is a solid foundation. But then there's the biggest complaint here. around the issues of the dams and the leases, where to break the cycle, where certain group of people have only have a right, where they think it's a best right, to have access to the dams. These dams, they belong to all our people. There were historical reasons that were them were to be decisive. We canceled 99-year leases. They have went to the highest court in the land, and the court has confirmed that it is correct that we must open it up. Now you'll never see 99-year leases. Then the lease agreements that we're opening up now will process them much faster. We'll allow the communities here that are directly affected and indirectly affected to have access to the dam. But when we give them the access to the dam for a number of economic opportunities, it must link up to the provincial economic growth and development strategy. It must link to a municipal LED, because if we give them the dam, they don't link it to the broader economy, it will be a problem. That's one component we need to look at. At the very same time, there's an appreciation, a voice that is raised by environmentalists, that while we are fighting over the dam in terms of its value of the asset is diminishing, it's depreciating, it's getting dirty. Many tourists will not come here. There have been incidents in the dam. There's debris here. People are throwing everything. Therefore, the question of management of pollution, cleaning the dam, removing the high seas. There is an integrated strategy to do that, but also some of the people here, they say they do have solutions. We'll want to look at that, but polluters must stop polluting. Municipalities in Gauteng are going to prosecute them. They can't be sending nearly 500 million liters a day down here of a sewer that is not treated or partially treated. Then the local municipality that is downstream, the water is so dirty. For them to treat it to be the right level, they have to spend a lot of money. And they end up having issues around that. Then the third element is municipality. There are too many people here who came to this beautiful place. They want to have economic opportunities. Municipality must regulate it. In other words, application for permits, for licensing and all other things, they have to check up that particular act and ensure that when they do inspection, they treat everybody the same in terms of compliance. Then there is issue that they are raising very sharply around tolerance, around noise, they call it pollution. But you could see, they must agree, what are the trading hours? What can be done and can't be done without stifling business? Those are the issues. And in the next 7 days, we said the mayor must do that. We have taken a decision. We are creating a multi-stakeholder forum. National government, the ministry will lead it, supported by province and municipalities. Then this organization will come in there, will not leave anybody behind. Then they will oversee that particular work on the work streams I've said. But then the technical teams of our HODs and MMs, they will look at working on some of those issues. But the traditional leaders and the churches, they will work on social cohesion. We'll also bring in the Human Rights Commission as an expert body to support us. Human Rights Commission is very pleased that the department is engaging in a process to transform, open up the system. And their message in their own report, they say, let's move with speed. But we're not going to move at the speed where people wanted to. Remember, there were legal matters. People challenged us in court. We went to the High Court, went to Supreme Court, and went to the Apex Court. And those processes, they take their own life. At the very same time, internally, there are weaknesses in the system where the authorization processes around lease agreements were ascribed to an individual. Then there are vulnerabilities that you have to deal with. Now there's a proper committee that is looking at that particular issue so that the integrity of the process. We've opened up this matter in terms of the request for proposals. They are them. And I've given the instruction to the team. Let them look at them very fast, make decisions. We will not be in a position where we continue to sit with some of these applications for a year or 2 years. That is unacceptable. We have the capacity like we did with the water license in Western for a year or two. Now we issue them within 90 days. And then when I go back, we engage with the minister. I will put them on a tighter deadline. But in the main, we have made a choice to stop pointing fingers at each other. We have said we are starting a new chapter. It's not going to be an easy journey, but we'll hold hands. Even the weakest link in the chain will hold them tight.
All right. Look, we've run out of time, but I just want to get some closing remarks from our guests. Russell Baloyi, again, is a Harata BS Community Development Initiative. He's a spokesperson there. Mr. Baloyi, just in closing, you know, you must have been there yesterday when the Deputy Minister was there. What's your sense of
No, I think yesterday was a major breakthrough, in the sense that the deputy minister has somehow committed to a number of things, and in the main for us is that this agreement that we need to coexist and share in the dam's economy. So all that is needed now is what we have been waiting for, which is government increasing its role to ensure that all people who have been allocated portions along the dam are given the time to occupy their spaces, so that the dam ultimately somehow shows the demographics of our country. It cannot be that it's only one race. And mind you, they have been there forever. It's 30 years into this. They've already taken 30 years. And we are saying that the statement that was made is it is that the 99-year leases are cancelled, all of them. We're hoping that at least as a new entrance in the dam, at minimum, we get 50 years. But at least now, they have said that the 9-year, 11 months that they were giving us is not enough, definitely. Because if you take a loan from the bank for development, there's no way you can refund it in 10 years. Because it's a serious investment that we need to make there. So we need a bit longer time. Our white counterparts have already been there. I think the other issue that we still need to negotiate with them, of course, is around the price that we need to pay. And our view is that the Department of Water and Sanitation's mandate is not to make money. It cannot be that white people have been operating there, paying one rand per month. Suddenly, there's black people who are coming forward to say, we want to take advantage of this economy. The department wants to turn around and say, now, you must pay market-related prices. We don't believe that it's fair or correct. We also deserve to be given a fair chance, and the government must not be ashamed to take a decision that they were going to empower black people, because the transformation agenda has been sort of has been taking a backseat over the years. And with this GNU now taking a center stage, we understand that it's going to be a bit difficult, but there must be an understanding by everybody in the GNU that 30 years into our democracy, it cannot be that we are still dealing with the problems that people like the Cosa Spor were fighting for today. So there has to be changes somewhere.
Appreciate your time.
Generally, all I'm saying is that I think the government spirit is quite encouraging, and we're looking forward to work very closely with government and all the stakeholders.
Appreciate your time. Mr. Hartley Ngwatu, who's owner of Legacy on the Dam, your sentiments on how the meeting yesterday went?
Yeah, I'm quite excited about what how the meeting went yesterday, particularly on aspects that the minister pronounced on, that the lease policy, the current lease policy, need to be reviewed. The period related or mentioned in the lease period also need to be looked into. Obviously, then also suggests that the period that was mentioned in the expression of interest of 36 months will obviously not apply, because obviously the lease period then will have to change, and that's a positive sign going forward.
When are you meeting again? Is there an update, you know, that you... Are you going to meet again, reconvene with the ministry?
Well, the minister has constituted a steering committee to look into these matters going forward, and we are looking forward to receive invitations to participate progressively in those things and giving advice and expertise in terms of how best to resolve the matter going forward.
All right. Appreciate your time. Owner of the Legacy on the Dam, Hartley Ngwatu. Mr. Matibedi, you've had quite a journey with all of this. Tell me where you are at with your business right now.
Look, we currently still closed. The site is still a crime scene because the forensic team only finished, a week ago. It was a long, tedious investigation that they obviously had to conduct, so currently we are not operational. My employees are crying out there at home. This has affected obviously my family in person, my business partner, and people that we were had established relationships with to make business work.
Suppliers and all of that. Yeah,
it's just the, and the suppliers are also white. You know, they are also calling to say, "Oh, Tabiso, this is bad." But I'm very much encouraged and motivated by the meeting yesterday with the minister. That obviously they will see how they can help to rebuild bubbles. I was also encouraged by the executive mayor of Madiveng, who was also there, also the local traditional leadership, because we must understand that historically the lands were owned by the traditional leadership. So it was quite beautiful to have the leadership there, you know, to say even they on their side, they are against this attacks which are happening to black businesses in this town. So the community, the government, and everyone has come together. Yes, we feel that to a certain extent there is some sort of delays in deliverables from government, where we have to get audience from the government when there's a big issue, you know. But we've been crying, for example, about this racism since 2018, you know. We have cases against the police themselves. Nothing is done. Now it's the ASEAN case. But we are happy and so much positive. And I must just commend our deputy minister for his clear path that he has created. It gives light at the end of the tunnel, and it was very encouraging. The meeting was very progressive. Yes, you'll have people, you know, who want to advance, you know, their own things, but I'm happy with the deputy minister's delivery yesterday.
Well,
very encouraging. We really appreciate it.
We're only going to leave it here for today. We'll keep tabs on the story. We'll make sure that we follow up and see whether there is progress, whether the mood in the area has changed. But I really appreciate you giving us your time this evening, and all the best. We really hope that the business comes back alive again and your workers can go back to work. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Timon. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you. That's Thabiso Matibedi, who is the owner of Bubbles Champagne Garden, which was burned down. You've heard the stories, the background stories there. Unfortunately, those racial tensions in Harties. Yeah, it's going to be quite a journey. We will keep an eye on the story. We will also make sure that at some point we reconnect as well with the Deputy Minister of Water and Sanitation, or whoever it is that they've allocated to have a steering committee to manage all of these tensions. Things like this don't change overnight, I can tell you now. So we are all optimistic now, and it's good to be optimistic. I'm looking forward to seeing whether it sustains this optimism. So, yeah, let's take a quick break. I'll be back after this.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.